Who's the new goalie?
JCPT. Some hotshot they call up from the minors.
Stack them up! Extra maple syrup? Merveilleux! Glovely! See you in the highlight reel? Quick, quick, like a shot. Pop check. Sensational! Nice try, no goal off.
Welcome in, boys and girls. It is time for show 26. Normally, I save this time to mention a player that wore 26, but only 12 players have worn that number, and they all pretty much suck. But welcome to our wrap-up show here, the end of the 26th season here on show 26. It is the Pucknologist on Teal Town USA. As always, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're listening to us on, and follow us at Pucknologists on the Twitter machine. With me, as always, on one side of San Jose, the lovely, the talented, the Rocket Backender.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of listening audience, and welcome to the final show of Pucknologists for season 26. Oh, my heart is so heavy and soggy.
Hey now. On the other side of San Jose, the one and only Mr. Jerk.
Hello. How are you beautiful people doing?
I'd probably be better if I was watching Team Teal in round two, but
right.
Such is life. And with that, we will cover the series pretty quickly. Let's just kind of give the highlights and lowlights here. Starting with game one at Edmonton, the Sharks get a 3-2 overtime victory. Sharks kind of came out flat to start this first period, give up two goals. They show some resolve in the second and third period with goals from Martin and Ward. And Ward's goal comes with 2 seconds left on the power play. So, oh my God, they got a power play goal. We know I like to beat that drum. Oh my Lord. Carlson hits the overtime winner at 3:22 of OT. The Sharks going a paltry 1-for-6 on that power play. Like they said, 2 seconds left, but they still got one. And it turned out to be pretty huge, as it did send things to overtime. And in this one, the Sharks kind of unloaded on this one. 44 shots on goal to the Oilers 19. And all in this game, the refs were busy. A combined 9 power plays happened in this one. So we'll start with you, Rocket. Game one, your thoughts.
Oh, man, it should not have gone to overtime. It should have been like a 12-2 Sharks victory with as many undisciplined penalties as the Oilers took. It was like a shooting gallery. It was a ripe for the taking. Unfortunately, that power play did not spark. And it was so frustrating to watch. And I think that you have mentioned this before, AJ, that it was the Oilers didn't really feel the dire necessity to make sure that they were playing super clean, because, hey, if they got a man down, it wasn't like the Sharks were going to score. So it made me frustrated. And also, I don't think Joe Thornton was in this game, was he?
No, he missed the first two.
Yeah, so that didn't really spark too much confidence in me either.
Yes, it sucked. Mr. Jerk.
You know, this game probably followed the NHL's, like, you know, narrative script to a T. I mean, it starts out the young team, the fast team. They get going early. They get the goal. The crowd is just lit, having a good time, and everyone's feeling good. And then here comes the veteran team, and they start to take over play as the game goes on. And eventually the Sharks, you know, all the credit in the world to them. They showed resiliency. They showed, you know, that they weren't going to be pushed around by, you know, the fresh face of the playoffs. And, you know, they got a win that I think they needed from the start because, you know, Edmonton is a fast team and they're a good team, obviously, and they needed to get ahead of the game as soon as possible.
Big time. Could not agree more. And with that, we move on to game two, where the Sharks pull off a 2-0 loss, quite possibly the worst playoff game in Sharks history, to be quite honest. Sharks go 0-6 on the power play. While giving up two shorthanded goals to both Cassian and McDavid, and the Oilers completely flipping the script in this one, this time outshooting the Sharks 36-16, and this one had a combined 10 power plays in it. And funnily enough, Rocket talking about how the Oilers don't care if they take penalties because the Sharks have proven that they don't have a power play. And in this particular game, Oilers going on the penalty kill essentially provided them a power play. Was their power play for Edmonton. In you know, the sad thing being that the Oilers put up two shorthanded goals in this one, which is more goals than the Sharks scored in three different games this series. So game two, Cam Talbot getting one of his two shutouts in this one. Jerk, game two for you, good sir.
You know, the first period of game two probably went as good as it could have gone if you're the Sharks. I thought they started out really strong. Obviously, they had zero goals in this game, but I thought they controlled the play for a majority of the first period, and then you know, something happened in between the first and second that kind of blew the wheels off of the train, if you will. And it was all downhill from there. Picture the third Back to the Future movie with the train just going into the ravine. That was the Sharks in the second and the third.
Rocket, yours?
So I just got the bill yesterday from the therapist's office for the six-hour chat I needed to have about that game and what it did to me. God, I love this team. I love following a team that can be. You just look at them and you're so proud, and you're like, look at all these accomplishments, and they've done so well, and they're doing this and hard work, and they're developing. And in less than 24 hours, you can turn around and be like, I hate everyone on this team. They all need to be shipped off to Arizona or Utica, and I can't stand. I hate hockey. I hate everyone. I hate ice cubes. I hate everything. Like it. This team can disappoint you in ways you had no idea you were capable of being disappointed.
I do have one question: is Utica near Utica?
I don't know. Is it Utica?
Yeah, it's Utica. But I like Utica. It sounds like it would be next to Manteca. But
probably. Anyway. Let's see. Okay, here's the deal. Like, I grew up in Manteca, so that's why I put the, like, maybe that's why I pronounced it the way I did.
See? That's all I'm saying. See? So,
Utica!
Utica! So, after game two, the Sharks bring it home for the first of two at the Tank. Sharks versus Oilers game three. Sharks a little bit better in this one. It was a much more balanced game, far less penalized, with a combined three power plays between the clubs. The Sharks opened the first period with a very physical game, out hitting Edmonton and out shooting them 13-6. But in the second period, Edmonton would make some changes during that intermission and flip the script, hitting the Sharks more while putting 12 shots on goal to the Sharks 4. And in the third period, both teams playing somewhat tight, afraid of making the big mistake, as Edmonton gets 4 shots on goal to the Sharks 6 shots on goal. But it would be the Sharks who blinked first with a piss-poor pass or clearing attempt, however you want to phrase it, from David Schlemko that ends up on the stick of Cassian, who was conveniently headed to the slot and backhands it 5-hole on Jones. Giving the Oilers a 1-0 victory in this one. The Sharks go 0-for-2 on their power play, and don't tell me a power play goal would not have been huge in this one. And since Ward's power play goal of Game 1 up through Game 3, the Sharks had gone 0-for-10 on their power play opportunities. Rocket, your thoughts, Game 3.
I have no idea about Sharks playoffs hockey that isn't 4 rounds of playoffs that ends in a Stanley Cup final series loss. That is the only postseason team I know, because when I started watching the team, they didn't have a postseason. So I went from 0 to 99.44%. And this, I would say, this was beginning to develop into a series that maybe was looking like it was going to be, oh gosh, I don't even think it was going to break the 40% barrier. It was just, it didn't look good. It, if this were an actual Shark, it would have been sort of beginning to turn sideways and turn almost over without swimming. But then it would just occasionally flip a fin, like, oh, it's not dead yet. It's not, it's still, it, you can make it, little Shark, you can make it. But it, that was this game.
Oh man, Mr. Jerk.
It's emotional.
Yeah. You know, game three was relatively even the whole way through. You know, you're absolutely right in describing it as a almost like a standoff with both sides afraid of making a mistake. And ultimately it was the Sharks who made the mistake, but I thought there were a lot of things in this game that the Sharks had to be proud of. I mean, obviously you're losing by one goal and it wasn't one of the big guys, you know, tearing apart the team. That's obviously something to be happy about. Overall, I thought, especially in the third period, the Sharks controlled the play and really just got unlucky.
How did you feel about the chemistry with the lower lines in that game?
I really enjoyed the fourth line. I believe it was Timo, Tierney, and Sorensen. I thought that line had instant chemistry, and they were probably the best line through the first three games until Bodker was scratched and things got swapped around.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, yep. And so we go to game four, which was the holy cow, what in the actual hell game, where the Sharks threw a touchdown 7-0 victory over Edmonton. Of course, being very apropos seeing how Jerry Rice opened the door for the Sharks to come out of the dressing room on this one. And in this one, the Sharks' big names finally showing up big. You got Burns with 3 points in this game and wasn't even named one of the three stars. but in this one, yeah, I know, slacker. In this one, Edmonton did kind of go full douchebag. I mean, huge. You've got Draisaitl spearing Tierney right in the stones. He did get a hearing and only had to pay $2,600 for that little cup check. I think it should have been more, but maybe that's me wearing the teal glasses. But to me, you do something, if you want to get something like that out of the game, you make it, maybe you make the penalty a bit more than what a, you know, team dinner would cost a player. McDavid even got a little dirty in this one, and it felt like Edmonton was following LA's playbook there for a second. The Sharks though, do find their power play in this one, going 4-for-8. And I think it really goes to say a lot that over the course of three out of the first four games, you have the Oilers, I mean, taking 20 penalties, almost daring the Sharks to beat them on the power play, which of course they were really only able to pull off in game four. So, Rocket, your take on just the touchdown that heard around the league.
Okay, so I was at games 4 and 5.
And let me just preface this too. This is the score that Rocket had been betting on for months now.
Yeah, so I think that this night was proof, A, that the hockey gods exist, B, that the Sharks listen to the podcast, and C, they like me. They really like me. Okay, so I was at this game and I got really good seats and I took pictures the whole time. I think I took close to 600 pictures. Yeah, lots. The sharks.
If you want to catch those, Tealtown USA on Instagram.
True. That's very true. The Sharks looked really good in this game. The Oilers looked maybe like, kind of like SAP Center was getting to them a little bit. You know, the tank can be loud during playoffs. It can be really loud. And even though there were ball seats here and there, you know, it wasn't completely full to capacity. It was still quite a rambunctious audience. And I really, I have to say that just from being in-house for both games and getting to witness Edmonton fans, firsthand with their little sparkly copper pom-poms in tow. They are so enthusiastic about their team being in the race this year. They are just excited for it.
Which will happen when you miss the playoffs for a decade.
Right. And I think that their enthusiasm, even though it's slightly obnoxious, you know, much like 14-year-old brothers are obnoxious to 17-year-old sisters, it's like, whatever, they're exuberant and they're happy and they're there to support their team and cheer their team. They're not necessarily there to sling insults at your team. It's not a personal, you know, insult to cheer on their team. And I think that was the overwhelming vibe I got from everybody who I saw. They were loud, they were orange, and they were there for Edmonton. Like, they really were, and they didn't care about anybody else. And I was kind of like, oh God, those people are loud. But you know what? Good on them for being loud, because they weren't jerks. So the guys in the ice might have gotten frustrated, but the fans sure didn't. They were there to support their team.
That, and I couldn't agree more. When you saw the games at SAP on TV, you saw patches of orange in the audience. Yet when you saw the games at Rogers up in Edmonton, you didn't see a lick of teal.
Nope.
Mr. Jerk, game four for you.
The only way I can describe game four was that it was a shellacking by the Sharks.
Was it a crack-a-lackin' shellacking?
Oh, God.
Please stop. Okay. You know, it was, and obviously hindsight is a hell of a drug, but watching this game, I thought that had put the Sharks in position to take the series. You know, it was a commanding lead. They had finally gotten to Cam Talbot at a good pace, obviously, with seven goals. Four power play goals is awesome. I will take that every day. But
also a hell of a drug.
Yes, but when you have eight chances, like 50% clip, I mean, it's great and all, but it's like, oh man, if Edmonton is going to give you that many chances, Take them all.
Yeah, I know, for real.
But I don't know. This game, this was a good game, but I fear that it created a false sense of security.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I think it did shock the crap out of Edmonton fans a little bit as well. Like, maybe they were, you know, poked the or awoken the sleeping beast for a minute there. Or I should say awoken the sleeping Western Conference champions. Unfortunately, heading back to Edmonton, that would not be the case, as the Sharks end up with a 4-3 overtime loss. And excuse me, I should note as well in the game four that a franchise record was set in fastest tally in playoff history for the Sharks, with the first tally coming in 15 seconds in from Joe Pavelski. So, game five, 4-3 overtime loss. And as I throw it to Mr. Jerk, I leave you with just a couple of words. It was 3-1.
This game sucked. It was, I mean, I can't say that I was surprised. We've seen this happen before. But this is literally the game. You know, you won 7-0 in the previous game. This is the game to, you know, flaunt what you got, so to speak, and be like, yeah, you know, we're the big dog in town. 12 playoff appearances in the last 13 years. We are donezo with you guys. And they let it get away with them, away from them. I mean, it's not the first time it's happened. It won't be the last time it's happened, and it happens to other teams, but it was the worst possible time for it to happen.
Absolutely. And for those of you who weren't aware, Teal Town USA, we had a little watch party at a local tap room, and Rocket and I were there to watch this game and represent Teal Town USA. And I got to be honest, when Edmonton scored the first goal, it was just kind of like, oh my God, what happened to the 7-0 thing? Well, we got plenty of time. It's okay. Then the Sharks tied up. And then like 6 minutes later, they take the lead. And then it was like, oh, remain calm. All is well. And that didn't last that long, Rocket.
Yeah, no, I agree. The Oilers decided to just keep playing hockey, you know? And that's really, I think, what happened was if you don't push for the puck for 60 minutes, then somebody else or the other team is going to push for it and they're going to get it. And if you don't have the puck, you can't score. So, like, they just stopped pushing for it, and Edmonton got the puck. And Edmonton scored with the puck, which is what they are going to do because they are fast. And they looked really fast in this game. I'm not going to lie. Like, there was a couple of breakaways and a lot of odd man rushes that I thought Jones really had. Like, he saved a lot of ridiculous shots in this game. But what?
You know, I knew that Todd McClellan was coaching in this series, but I had no idea that he was back coaching the Sharks, because the way they sat on the lead and let it get away from them was something we saw time and time again when Todd McClellan was our coach.
Well, maybe it's not Todd McClellan then. Maybe it's something that's still in that system.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can take the boys away from McClellan, but you can't take McClellan out of the boys. So we move on to game six, what ends up being the final one in the series, the Sharks getting a 3-1 loss. In this one, the Sharks kind of had to weather the first period, even though this was back in the friendly confines of SAP, but they were just never able to find an answer to match the Oilers' speed and intensity, quite similar to last year versus the Pens in that series. A lot of costly turnovers. And before I throw it over to to Mr. Jerk, I just want to say a big fat F you to the douchebag of a fan who dumped popcorn on the Oilers bench at the end of that game. You are what is wrong with fans, dude, whoever you were, that you don't do that. You want to dump it on a guy in an Edmonton jersey? I wouldn't even do that. You know, dump it on yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's
yeah,
what
dump
that's
it
what
on
you,
yourself.
That's seriously what it feels like, you know. So, I'm sorry. Mr. Jerk, game six for you.
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you this right now. All of us here at Teal Town USA and Pucknologists and Hockey Jerk, we like to say that something or someone is bad and they should feel bad. And obviously, we use it as a joke. That's what we're all about. It's jokes, but the guy who dumped popcorn on the Edmonton bench, I mean this with 100% sincerity, you are bad and you should feel bad. And I hope you are never at another Sharks game because you're an embarrassment.
Yeah, good choke on a popcorn kernel.
That being said, this game, man, you know what? I mean, hats off to the Oilers. They were coming into enemy territory. They knew it was going to be hard. And, you know, they put on their big boy pants and they're like, no, we got to win this game. We can't let it come back to Edmonton for a game seven, because as the old cliche goes, anything can happen in a game seven. So, you know, obviously you got to give props to the Oilers for, you know, stepping up in a big time role like that. But man, it's just, who's got the first goal for the Sharks? Oh, it was Marlowe. When Marlowe got that goal in the third period, I really thought the Sharks were going to do it. And then Pavelski hit the crossbar, but you know
oh
what?
Oh my God. I cannot believe how many posts and crossbars were hitting this one.
Yeah, seriously. At that point, it's almost like the Sharks weren't meant to win, but again, it's what we've seen many times before and what I'm sure we'll see again. You know, the Sharks are out of a game for, you know, 54 minutes, and then they get that teaser goal and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, crap, you know, we're playing a game right now. you know, pressure, 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 and they almost tied it up. But you know what? Hockey's a 60-minute game. You can't wait till minute 54 to start doing anything.
Amen to that.
Can't wait till that point to start doing hockey things. Rocket, game six for you.
Yeah, hockey helps those who help themselves, man. if you let the other team get two up on you, you have put yourself in a hole and you have a grand struggle ahead of you. I want to say this about Patrick Marleau. I have wanted to give him grief all season long about his efforts and how he's trying to cash in on this being a contract year. But I have to say that Patrick Marleau is a lot better on his half cheek days than I think some people will be on their full cheek days. Like he's good. And when he needs to show up, he shows up. And if he doesn't show up, it's probably because six of his fingers are broken, two of his vertebrae are out of alignment, and his chakras aren't good. You know, like something is very bad. So he's Mr. Shark for a reason, and he gets my respect. Having said that, like, they didn't do themselves any favors in this damn game. And after the Oilers scored two, it was like, okay, come on, guys. Come on, let's do this. And yeah, they finally did show up and start to turn the ship around and get in their groove, but they didn't show up when the puck dropped, and that was a big mistake.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. But that was the series that was, so to speak. So the Sharks get knocked out by the Edmonton Oilers 4-2 in this series. And so, of course, we move on to the three stars of the series, or what we like to call...
Oh, good for you!
And we will start with Mr. Jerk and his third star.
My third star of the series is going to be Patrick Marleau, because as Rocket alluded to, he always shows up when we need him to. He got the goal in game six that gave the Sharks the shot in the arm that they needed. And you know what? He led the team in goals these playoffs with a broken thumb. So don't tell me that he doesn't want it or that he doesn't care. And you can talk about how he only gets it up in a contract year, but you know what? Marleau is a goal scorer. And in those 2 years that he, you know, sucked last year and 2 years ago, he, you know, that first year he got 50 points, and last year he had over 20 goals. So, I mean, maybe this is just me, but maybe those 2 years where he sucked, he didn't actually suck. I mean, again, I'm no expert, but
hashtag, you know, might be good.
Might be good. And you know what? I think he deserves all the praise and all the credit that he gets, because he was there when we needed him and when no one else was.
All right, and my third star goes to Patrick Marleau for everything Hockey Jerk just said. Rocket, your third.
My third star is going to go to Melker Carlson. The kid's been quietly having himself a solid series. Like, he's in on the puck. He finds the weird little bouncy rebound things and scoops it towards the net a lot. He's got a good physical presence, and he's smart with his plays, I think, is what I like about him. He's intelligent, but he's got a lot of physical presence, and he's getting to be better than last year.
Nice. And now time for the second star. And my second going to Jumbo himself, Mr. Joe Thornton, for now that we have been told by the media for locker cleanout day and everything, that Jumbo was playing with an MCL ACL tear. Holy crap. No, because there was a lot of talk how he missed the final couple games of the regular season, but said, you know, I'll be ready for game one. I'll be ready. I'll be there, no doubt. And of course, as we all saw, he ended up missing the first two games, which really kind of made people think like, okay, there is definitely more than meets the eye here. So, yeah, you're going to get a star from me if you play a playoff series in hockey with a torn MCL and ACL. Yeah, that gets a star. Rocket, your second.
My second star, I think I'm going to give it to Logan Couture. Because Like, it's, I'm just thinking about his face. Love you, Logan. No, he just basically getting kicked in the teeth by a horse, essentially, is what getting that puck, that Brent Burns puck in the mouth was. So getting kicked in the teeth is bad. But when you're Logan Couture, that's even worse. Because he's got really big teeth. And it just, the amount of pain, just sheer pain that he had to overcome to come back to the series and get rid of all the headgear as quickly as possible. That guy is the reason why I bought into this team in the first place. And that man is the reason I continue to buy into this team, because he is tough as nails.
Yeah, we're not saying he has big teeth, but the Chiclets Gum Company, actually, their nickname for their candy are Coutures.
They're Coutures, yeah.
Yes. Jerk, your second.
My second star is Mr. Timo Meier, because, you know, the whole season it was, you know, Timo time, bring Timo up, where's Timo, Timo this, Timo that, and...
Timo Nucleosis.
Timo Nucleosis, you're welcome. And you know what? His I don't think he had a regular season to be totally excited for, but as soon as playoffs came around, holy crap, he was probably the Sharks' best player in the series besides Patrick Marleau and besides Thomas Hertl. But you know, he was physical, but he was disciplined at the same time, which has been a problem for him, especially with the Barracuda. And you'd like a guy who makes such an impact like that to find the score sheet. But at the same time, you know, he's a rookie. And if he consistently puts up solid performances like that as a rookie, I can only imagine what he's going to do when he has, you know, a couple full seasons to really get into the groove of things.
Yeah, I was actually kind of shocked that he was scratched for game six, but I can understand that PDB just wanting to go with all the experience possible. So I get that. But yeah, I completely agree that Timo Meier, while it might have been somewhat quietly, had a really consistent, you know, well-played series. And now it's time for the first star. And we go to you, Miss Backhander.
Hey, my first star is Chris Tierney. I really just enjoyed watching him this series.
Cobra.
That's all. Good job.
We need to switch that up. You know, whenever we say Tierney, we have to Cobra, like we used to go Lurg. We have to Cobra. Hockey Jerk, you're first.
Okay.
Don't you dare take mine, I swear to God.
My first star is Cam Talbot, because you know what, he started 75 games in the regular season, which by any standards is not good, and he was probably the Oilers' best player in the series. Time and time again, you know, you think the Sharks are getting pressure and he had all the answers in the world, and he looked like just a Vezina Trophy goalie, and he was just amazing. There's no other way to put it.
I can see what you're saying, because it's not like Edmonton is known for their defense. So I can kind of get that. On the other hand, though, hearing you name him as first start does make me want to dump popcorn on your head.
I'm just saying our run sheet says stars of the series.
I know. I hear you. I'm just saying.
So Hockey Jerk will be turning in all of his Sharks gear tomorrow, his locker clean out.
No more gold stars.
Yeah, no more gold stars. He's just going to go report to the Edmonton oil factory and go be orange.
He's going to go wash Drew Amendo's car.
Hey, I'm sure there's a nice comfy chair on that Oilers bandwagon for you, bud. Yeah. Enjoy it.
My first star, of course, is Mark Edward Vlasic. This guy was given a pretty big task in shutting down Connor McDavid over the course of this series, and he did for the most part. I mean, Connor McDavid only had 3 points in the series, a goal, two helpers, and the goal that he did have was the shorthanded one. So he was shut down, and if you go back to before the series started, there were some Vegas odds, and one of the over-unders was Connor McDavid over under 7 points in this series. So setting it at seven was pretty huge, and clearly Vegas expected him to break out. So for Vlasic and company to shut that down is pretty damn good. And I can bet you that Anaheim is looking at that tape as as the days move on before they get their series started with Edmonton in the second round. So Vlasic, you my numero uno, bro. And if you were named one of the 3 stars of the series.
Oh, good for you.
And so just some quickies for Shark Bites. As we came to find, Thornton played this series with a tear for his MCL ACL, Marlowe with a broken thumb, Hurdle with a broken foot, and of course, we all know the struggle that is Logan Couture's dental bill. I mean, you say what you want. I mean, hockey players are just tough mofos. You see, a guy in football gets turf toe, he's out 3 to 4 weeks. A guy in baseball, sprains his pinky, he's out, he's on the DL for 7 days. And a basketball player, I don't know, like steps out of the shower the wrong way and he's out for a week and a half. And you've got guys like Thornton. There are people that can't walk with an MCL, ACL tear, and this guy's out there skating and pushing off on it. There are people that can't grip things, much less a hockey stick, and put force behind a shot if they have a broken thumb, and Marlowe did it. And I mean, I don't know about you, but broken feet aren't the nicest thing to deal with. So, I mean, just good on these guys and just wanted to get that out there. But I will ask you, I'll start with you, Mr. Jerk. And I know a lot of fans don't at me. Well, you know what? Go ahead at me. I don't care. Did we see Marlowe score his last goal as a Shark in game six? Did we see Thornton put on a teal jersey for the last time in this series?
For Marlowe, I'm going to say no. And here's why. Because it take the contract and the salary out of it, okay? Patrick Marlowe was considered a depth goal scorer, and I'm going to tell you why. Because the big guys on this team are Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture, and Brent Burns. Those are the big guys. Joe Thornton, yes, to a lesser extent, but those three are your big guys. Patrick Marlowe, not a big guy, so by that definition, is a depth guy, and he had 27 goals, 74% of which were 5 versus 5. So if you can get him on the right contract, which I believe the Sharks will be able to, given at this point in his career, I will take 27 or I will take Patrick Marlowe for whatever if he's going to continue to score at that pace. And honestly, from what I've seen the last 3 years, there's no reason why I don't think he can. He still has the foot speed, which makes him an asset, obviously. He's still got one of the best shots on the team. And, like we said earlier, he's always a guy who shows up when we need him to. As for Joe Thornton, I'm going to say maybe, and that's not a he can't get it done thing. That's not a he doesn't want to be here thing. That's a he's 38 years old and he has to surgically repair his MCL and ACL. We know about Rafi Torres, we know about Tomas Hertl. Those surgeries take a lot out of you. And at his age, I don't know if he will have the motivation. Well, motivation, he probably will, but I don't know if he will be able to recover at the pace that he would like. And I think ultimately he's going to have to accept a lesser role or accept no role at all because of that injury.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think also to tack on about Marlowe is the fact that he was kind of the utility knife in the Sharks drawer this year, where it was, oh, you need him on the wing of the, on the second line? No problem. Oh, you need him to center the second line because there's an injury? No problem. Oh, you need him to be on the wing on the third line or center the third line, or the top line isn't producing, so you're going to create the all caps line and put him up there with Pavelski and Thornton. He was the utility knife this year, and he played all the, he didn't miss a game. I mean, so it just goes to show you the guy is still durable. And I have to agree with you. If you would have talked to me halfway through the season, I would have said no, Thornton you're keeping and Marlowe you're getting rid of. But I think we also know too, whether it's spoken or not. It does seem like DW, good old Dougie Wilson, has something in his mind that he just wants there to be one player who was a lifelong Shark, just from birth to death. he just wants him there. It doesn't matter. Rocket, your take on Marlo Thornton.
So do they have to kill Patrick Marlo?
Well, I mean, not right away.
Oh.
Just, you know, eventually in like 45 years.
Okay. This is from birth to death.
Well, you know what I mean. Birth of career to death of career. Not like, you know, actual player.
That'd be funny though. No, I don't think either one of them goes. I think that they'll probably be like, well, let's just give it a shot and see how it goes. And they'll get like maybe 2/3 of the way through the season. I think Patty will do fine. And Joe will probably just disintegrate into pieces and have to just take the rest of the season off.
Yeah, I can see that. But my thing is, now this is, again, I said, you know, do you think that we have seen them play their last games in teal? Now it's more of the case of, do you think they should have played their last games in teal? And for me, the overwhelming answer is yes, it is time to move on. Those guys count for a lot of money, like damn near $13 million between the both of them. Mm-hmm. That is a lot of cash for guys that are on the decline. And as I've stated multiple times, the Bill Walsh theory, dump a guy a year too early rather than a year too late. And it's just time. Doug Wilson, as we've seen, has just tried to build this team around these two guys over the last decade. And he's tried rentals at the deadline. He's clearly tried the rebuild effort over the last year. It's just hasn't worked. I'm not saying that is Marlo and Thornton's fault by any stretch. I'm just saying it's time to move on.
So do you think that Vancouver fans feel this way about the Sedins?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? When you hear Vancouver guys calling in, they were asking for the Sedins to be moved a couple years ago. But of course, same problem that Marlo and Thornton have are those damn no move clauses.
All right. So here's the deal. I don't think that Patty and Joe go anywhere until the Sedins go somewhere.
See, but I don't think the Sedins are
one to make the first move. I think he's got to see somebody else do something so it doesn't make him look like he's the bad guy kicking the old studs out for newer meat.
I mean, hey, be a trailblazer.
Which is what it is, but that's how, you know, it's nothing personal. That's how the business is.
Yeah, but be a trailblazer. I mean, and the Sedins have one more year on their deal before they're gone.
Then Joe and Patty will get 2 years, and that second year will be a buyout.
But that's the problem, though. The Sedins have another year on their deal, so I guarantee you the Sedins are not there after the end of that deal. And in fact, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a move to try to find some dance partner, somebody that will take those contracts off. Maybe the people that need to hit the cap floor or something along those lines. God, wouldn't it be great if Vegas worked out a deal that they could claim both those guys? Which leads me to who do you think, and I'll start with you, Jerk, who do you think Las Vegas does take from the Sharks? I'm not talking about who is covered, who isn't, just the one player that just, it's, you know, it fits everything in your mind that, yeah, that would make the most sense for Vegas to take that player.
For me, it's Dylan DeMello. He's got an affordable contract. He's a proven NHL player. And he's very young. So right there, check, check, check. And over the last 2 years, he's bounced back and forth being the sixth defenseman, being the seventh defenseman, despite, as I said before, being a legit NHL defenseman. So obviously the player doesn't have a say in it. But I would think that if Vegas did claim him, he would welcome the opportunity to play on a regular basis. So I think it's Dylan DeMello.
Well, I kind of agree with you in that I think Vegas is going to take a defenseman from the Sharks named Dylan, but it's not Dylan DeMello. I think Vegas takes Brendan Dylan. You look at his age, you look at his contract, the way that he's come along the last couple of years. I don't know. It all depends on if the Sharks decide to cover him or decide to cover Braun. And yeah, I for some reason, I have this feeling that Vegas will look take a hard look at Brendan Dillon, to the disappointment of Miss Rocket Backender, who believes that Vegas will take who?
Okay, firstly, I don't understand how if Brendan Dillon gets traded, that's a disappointment to me.
Well, I mean, you still get to watch him play, just being a different jersey.
He's still my favorite player.
Yeah.
Like, he's still my favorite player out there, and I will love and cherish him in no matter whose sweater he wears. So the fact that he's going to another club, that's fine. It just gives me a little bit more homework to have to do. Big deal. I think it's really, really curious how everybody expects me to be up in arms and upset, like, oh no, he's being traded from the team.
Well, you are the president of the North American Farm
Club. Of course I am, but I don't understand why this is associated with some sort of illogical, like, just overwhelming emotional response that has no basis in fact or rational.
Well,
rationality. Like, that's not me. I am not, like, super, I don't make these, like, I don't know how else to describe it. Just, wow. Oh my God, I just can't even. Like, that's not me. That is so not my personality. Like, I'm all still right. The North American, I'm the president of the Brendan Dillon fan club, the North American chapter. Hell yes, I am. And if he gets traded to Las Vegas, he gets traded to Vegas. And I hope to God he's got a good D partner. And I hope to God that he's got a good goalie. And I hope to God he's got good teammates, because I want to cheer for him and I want him to have a measure of success in his career. However, I do think that the powers that be will probably want somebody maybe who doesn't need as many edges to refine. And they would probably look at somebody like Braun. So well,
like I said, it all depends on if he's available, because I think the Sharks are going to go the 7-3 route and protect seven forwards and three defensemen. Clearly, Burns and Vlasic are the first two, so it's, will it be Braun? Will it be Dillon? Who knows? But, you know, maybe it is Braun, seeing that Braun is 30 and Dylan's 26. And Dillon makes a little bit less, but Braun's obviously played very well with Vlasic, and Braun and Vlasic are the same age. So, I mean, there's all sorts of different, you know, spinning cogs in this machine. So we'll find out in a couple months which way it goes. So either way, it doesn't matter if the guy's wearing Vegas or San Jose, he can still scream, Rocket, baby! So, let's go around the playoffs and talk about just a couple quick hits about what else happened around the league. We'll start over in the East because, you know, East Coast bias, hashtag it. New York, man, God love you, Rangers, beat the Montreal Canadiens 4-2. Canadiens clearly the top seed in that one, and so good on the Rangers. This was one where I picked the Canadiens to win this series, because Lundqvist had one of the worst seasons, if not the worst season he's ever had backstopping the Rags. And oh, he just came out and just destroyed and just blew Carey Price out of the building for most of these playoffs. So any takes from you on this one, Hockey Jerk?
I'm not surprised that Montreal lost. They kind of have a similar problem as the Sharks, where, you know, they've had a good goalie, but the goal scoring's not there. So by that, you know, that thought of it, I'm not surprised. But I am surprised this one didn't go seven, because Montreal and the Rangers, I feel, are relatively even teams, and there's a past hatred there. I thought it would go seven, but again, I'm not surprised the Rangers ended up winning the series.
Yeah, Rocket?
I'm sorry, what were we talking about? Something other than Sharks?
Yeah, pretty much. We're talking about the East Coast playoffs. Yeah, Rocket, don't care.
I don't care. No, I was rooting for the Leafs.
Like, okay, we'll get to that one in a minute.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. If it wasn't Sharks, it was Leafs, and I'm busy moving right now, so I don't have a whole lot of time to follow playoff hockey. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Sorry.
The other one in that bracket, of course, being Ottawa over Boston, 4-2. And this is another one that surprised me. I had Boston in this one, but Ottawa takes this. Any thoughts on this one, Jerk?
I think I had Boston winning this one too, but you know what? I have this very weird soft spot for Ottawa, so I'm glad they won it, won the series. And you know what? I'm not going to repeat it on the podcast because we're TV14, but if you go back on my Twitter, there is a certain part of the male anatomy that I feel Boston should eat. Back
Oh,
to you,
yes,
Adrian.
yeah, we understand. And
Now.
so of course those guys face off in the next round. And so we're gonna go out on a big fat limb here and say Rangers in six. Over on the other side of the East bracket, you had the Capitals in the Toronto Maple Leafs. Not gonna lie, I was really hoping Toronto would knock out the Caps
Same here.
and had a ton of hope when the Leafs were up 2-1 in this series. And then somehow Washington got serious and stopped, kind of playing with their food. And they knock out the Leafs 4-2. We joked around that several of us took, the Capitals in three, because just no one was giving Toronto any benefit of the doubt. Rocket, Washington, Toronto.
I was really excited for Toronto. I was excited for the fans. I was excited for Austin freaking Matthews. I really like that guy's. I love watching that guy skate. He's exciting to watch. He's a fun young kid who has great hands. It's nice to see.
Yeah,
I was.
I gotta admit, I enjoy watching Austin Matthews more than McDavid.
Yeah. No, I agree. The great thing about this series was how much bonus hockey was involved. This whole first round, nothing went to seven, but there was a whole lot of overtime. And I don't know about you, but I kind of would take that over an extra game. I don't know. I'm just a terrible person like that, maybe. The overtime that went on in the Toronto Washington series was intense. I don't know if it's really ever a series where it isn't intense. And it just seemed everything was really dramatic about this series. Every play was dramatic. Every bad call by the ref was just dramatic. Everything was intense, and it was the stuff that hockey dreams are made of. You know, it was a good series. And when at the end, even the Leafs fans were like, that was the most amazing thing ever. That sucked that we lost. But oh my God, that was amazing. Let's do it again. Like, that's the way you grow the sport right there. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And yeah, to yes, to the NHL's detriment, yeah, nobody went seven game series.
Yeah.
Jerk, any thoughts on Toronto, Washington?
I'm not surprised Washington won. Obviously, they're the better team. I think they're the team that comes out of the East. But I'm happy to see the Maple Leafs got two wins out of this because, you know, the Maple Leafs actually took some steps to become a better team this year. And I feel like people just read the word Leafs and automatically think they're crap. But I'm gonna let you
Yeah,
know a little secret. They're not.
they think Leafs is spelled LOLEAFS, right?
Loaves.
The other series, of course, in the East, the Pittsburgh Penguins facing the Columbus Blue Jackets. Pittsburgh taking this one in five games. I think this was the one that actually surprised a hell of a lot of people. A lot of people, I think, had this going seven because of the success that Columbus had during the regular season and that ridiculous win streak they went on in the middle of it. And I've pointed this out several times as we've started the playoffs. Tortorella just can't have nice things, guys. That's the end all be all of it. Tortorella cannot have nice things. Rocket, did you catch any Pens BJs at all?
No, I did not catch any Pens BJs at all. Sidney Crosby's I don't like him, and his fan club needs to just go find a closet and put themselves in it, maybe get a snack and stay there. Just go away.
A jerk.
I'm gonna be honest. I watched 0 minutes of this series.
Attaboy.
Dude, right there with you. And the primary reason being is because I knew Doc Emmerich would be on the call.
Bingo!
But I am surprised that Columbus didn't win more than one game, considering Columbus, you know, they don't have a first... They're on the market for a first-line center because they traded their first-line center, but...
There's Joe Thornton. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. Anyway, they're a good team. I thought they would have put up more of a fight, but you know what?
Tortorella.
Pittsburgh's a good team. So,
and so Pittsburgh faces Washington in their next round, and in that one, as you heard, Jerk is going with Washington. I unfortunately am going with Pittsburgh. Yeah. Well, we'll see how that one shakes out. So we move over to the West. And in another couple of shockers, Chicago getting swept by the Nashville Predators. And, you know, everybody saw that coming, right? I'm still dumbfounded by that, to be quite honest with you. I mean, it's not as if Chicago doesn't have a ton of experience on their team. And I think, though, that they also have a ton of salary, and they're gonna have to look at that in the offseason. But Rocket, Nashville, Chicago, your thoughts?
Nashville has been working this system for at least 2 years, where it's been on the cusp of greatness. Defensively, they've been they've had moments this year, but the system that they're running, I like it. I've liked it for a hot minute because of how I just want to say the way that this goes is that even when things don't work perfectly, it's still a defensive system and it still is capable of winning games if you use it and if everybody buys in. Like when everybody is at 100% and laser focused and on their game, it is unbeatable. So to watch the Predators against the Blackhawks, it kind of, I mean, I didn't watch full games of it, but watching snippets here and there, it almost felt like they just got a book of like the, you know, those For Dummies, that series. And this was just how to beat the Blackhawks in the NHL playoffs for dummies. And they just followed it line for line.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I didn't watch a lot of this series either, but only because I thought it was going to go exactly how it went, but opposite. Like, I thought Chicago was going to sweep Nashville. But, Jerk, Nashville, Chicago, your thoughts?
Well, I don't want to pat myself on the back too hard.
Here we go.
But I recall way, way back, the beginning of the season.
He's here to tell you a story, boys.
Right? Way back in the beginning of the season, I said that Chicago would be lucky if they made it out of the first round, because after their big guys, their depth was crap. And here we are.
This message brought to you by the gentleman who picked the Arizona Hockey Club to do great things this season.
I know.
This podcast hosted by the gentleman who didn't know what a home and home was until 3 months ago.
Hey now.
Oh, upside down emoji.
Wouldn't be an episode of the Pucknologist without hearing that tired horse crap. Okay. In another somewhat shocker of a result, St. Louis takes out Minnesota 4-1. This being the big shocker because, hey, Minnesota, if you looked at everybody on deadline day, everybody was pointing at Minnesota as the team that was clearly in it to win it, mm-hmm. signing Hanzel, making moves to really solidify their club. They had gone on some good stretches. Didn't they have like a new coach this year that like everything was just coming into place? Isn't this the yo?
Oh yeah.
So to see St. Louis upend them was just it was very, for me, all I could hear was Darth Vader from Empire Strikes Back. Just impressive, most impressive. That's what I took from that. And hey, give it up to St. Louis and especially Jake Allen, man. You didn't know what you were going to get from this cat going in, And man, talk about stepping up. Jake Allen, I want to see right now, I want to see a series between the Blues and the Rangers just to see Jake Allen go against Lundqvist because that's how good both of them have been in the first round. Hockey Jerk, Blues Wild, go.
You know what? I really thought this year was going to be the Wild's year because they loaded up at the deadline. The guys that they've been expecting to be impact players for them, you know, Granlund, Charlie Coyle, Eric Halla,
Hello.
they all finally came through. And man, I'll tell you, the one it's funny, the one year that Zach Parise isn't carrying the Wild is the year that everybody else on the Wild starts chipping in. But I think Minnesota is just like Columbus, where they were on such a roll the whole regular season that by the time the playoffs came about, they were just out of gas.
Oh, they shot the wad. Miss Backhander, Wild Blues.
Yeah, the reason why the Blues beat the Wild is because Tony X is on board. It's power of positive fans.
Man, white people been hiding this game from us for years, bro.
Golly, just said F it and left.
So great. Oh, if you don't know what the hell you're talking about, you're really missing out on something.
That was special.
Yeah.
The Blackhawks are 3-8 in the playoffs since Tony X became a hockey fan. Just
That is awesome. Stellar knowledge there, my brother.
go.
Then in the other sweep in the West, the one that broke my heart. Oh my God. The Ducks sweeping the Calgary Flames. Oh, did that piss me off? I totally expected Calgary to have a much better showing in this. Yes, Anaheim had a tremendous last, 4 to 5 weeks of the season, overtaking that 9-point lead that the Sharks had and coming along and winning the Pacific. I think they did something ridiculous, like they went like 8-2-1 over their last 11 games. So, I mean, Anaheim did have a hell of a showing, but Calgary looked pretty decent there. I'm just, oh, it's the one that got away. I really thought Calgary was going to, oh, I'm so verklempt. I thought they were going to have a better shot. Especially when you consider that, like, the last regular season game that these two teams played, 98 penalty minutes were involved. So I kind of expected a much longer series. But as they say in Anaheim, you can't win here, Calgary. Miss Backhander, your thoughts on this one?
Okay, so I remember you had said something about this would be a good series because there was something like 8,000 penalty minutes
Yeah, I just said
in,
it. 98. 98 penalty minutes.
8,000 minutes. So I was really expecting to see those minutes too, and it's unfortunate that they didn't appear. However, I think that there is a very good possibility that they might show up in this meeting between Anaheim and Edmonton. If you think about how many undisciplined penalties Edmonton took
That's
against the
true.
Sharks. Yeah. So there's still hope for that melee of, there's a meeting in the penalty box. Yeah. Sorry. I like 80s music. I don't care about Calgary. I don't like the Flames because that's what high stick the coach's face in the first place. So I hate the Flames. But I wanted to see more of a struggle. You
Yeah,
know, it's no
absolutely.
fun when they don't fight.
Jerk.
I thought Calgary was going to put up more of a fight. They got scoring from a lot of unusual suspects this year. Mikhail Backlund, 20 goals. Yeah, I couldn't have told you that. Matt Tkachuk comes into the league, puts up, I believe he had 50 points. You had a hard time convincing me of that. But you know what? At the same time, I believe Calgary's win streak towards the end of the season was 12 games, or maybe they had a point streak that was 12 games, but I know they had a good chunk of wins in a row. And it's almost like a bubble team that wins 11 games in a row might actually not be a good team. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I look forward to seeing what they do next season and to see if they can improve on that. Because if I remember correctly, too, they also have some pretty good cap space. So they can still make some moves and just make that team better. And they've got a lot of youth on that team. So we look forward to it. And moving into the second round, let's just hit it really quick. Hockey jerk, Nashville, St. Louis. Who goes to the next round?
It's going to be Nashville, and it's going to be in six games.
I'm going to say Nashville as well, but I'm actually going seven. Miss Backhander.
St. Louis in six.
Nice. I like her thinking outside the box. We'll stay in the West. Anaheim, Edmonton, Rocket, your call.
Edmonton in seven.
Well, that's good. Hockey jerk.
Anaheim in five.
Ooh, I'm actually going Anaheim in six. On the eastern side, New York, Ottawa, hockey jerk.
Ottawa in seven.
All right, I say New York in six. Miss Backhander, break the tie.
Ottawa in six.
Oh, how dare you! And finally, like I said, hockey jerks taking the Caps. I'm taking the Pens, and Miss Backhander.
Caps in five.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh man, it's like I want to see a 7-goal game. I want to see
The power of positive thinking. I'm telling you, if you keep repeating the things that you want, it's laws of attraction. They will be attracted to you. So you just have to keep saying them.
Okay, I
Seven
got you.
zero, and it happened.
I
It
got you.
happened.
All right, I'm positive Washington's not going to win in 5 games, but okay.
No. But Pittsburgh will lose in five games, so that's fine.
Oh, way to flip the script. The other fun thing I just wanted to point out too is that, this is just we're only a couple years into the whole realignment thing and the new playoff bracket, as it were, and just wanted to point out that if this season had been set up like it normally was up until a few years ago, the Caps would have faced Toronto, and the Habs would have faced the Rangers, but in the first round, the Pens would have played the Bruins and the BJs would have played the Sens. And while those opening rounds might not be as compelling, I think it could have made for much more compelling second round matchups. On the flip side, though, on the West, there's only one matchup that would have remained the same, and that's Chicago at Nash. If you go back to the old style, it would have been Minnesota at hosting Calgary, Anaheim hosting San Jose, Edmonton hosting St. Louis. And would the Sharks have fared better against Anaheim in the first round? I don't know. But either way, I understand what they're doing, trying to keep this whole thing where you play in your division in the first 2 rounds to try to build up those rivalries. I got to be honest with you, and I'll go to you first, Rocket. I'm gonna get sick of seeing the same damn teams every year. If the sh I mean, as long as the Sharks continue to make the playoffs, I'd like the ability to see, or at least the option. Obviously, if the Sharks win their division, the chances of them facing facing somebody outside the division grow, but I don't, I'd want to see other teams. Rocket, what do you think?
About the realignment and how it's going so far?
Well, just the fact that now with the current setup, you're forced to play in your division for the first 2 rounds.
Right.
Which essentially means you're going to be playing the same teams a lot in the postseason.
Yeah.
So you don't care. You're
No,
like,
because
yeah.
like, you have to remember, I don't know anything else.
That's
That's
true.
like, well, what do you prefer, English or French? Well, I only know English.
Okay, so it's my fault for asking your opinion on this.
Yeah,
'Cause
like
yeah, you don't know, yeah, you're
no, I
not
really
you don't
don't.
know
Like,
a
I'd love to
world
give you
other
the
than
answer,
this.
but I'm like, I don't mind. Yeah, we have to see the people in our division a whole bunch before we get out of the division. That's the motivation for making it out.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Jerk.
I mean, playing the teams in your division to make get out of the play or to get to the next round, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, I like the old playoff format where you were almost guaranteed to see a different team in the first round every year. And when you saw the same team in the playoffs multiple years in a row, it just went to show how, you know, how competitive those two teams actually were. I mean, I don't want to get too involved into it, but you look at, you know, the original format and the current format, you know, with the current format, we've seen LA twice in 3 years, while, you know, in the previous format, we saw, you know, we went through a stretch where we saw LA, we saw Vancouver, we saw Colorado, we saw St. Louis, we saw
Calgary, back Dallas, in the Detroit, division.
Nashville, Edmonton. Like, you saw so many more teams. And I, like, again, I think the division matchup makes sense, but at the same time, it allows, the old format allows, you know, fans to see star players on other teams if that's their thing on a national scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with you. So, yeah, I think there's, it's definitely can be debated both ways. And so, you know, if you have a conflicting, you know, like an opinion that goes, oh, AJ, you're totally wrong and Jerk is totally right, or the opposite of that, by all means, at Pucknologists on Twitter. We'd love to hear. So I think that's it, kids. It's been a fun ride this year with you guys. Obviously, this is the first season with the Pucknologists as we took over for the old teal-tinted glasses last season. So this is a fun one, but I hate to break it to you. This is the last one until, I don't know, September. Maybe we'll do one, or the very beginning. We'll probably do maybe a roundup of how they did in the preseason and the new guys for the draft stuff, free agency, all that stuff. You can listen to the podcast, Teal Town USA. There, I mean, After Dark or Teal Town Live, whatever it ends up being called. But that, you know, that there will the episodes will be there. And if you use SoundCloud or whatever, just, you know, subscribe Teal Town USA. Those podcasts, they'll all be there. And so we will be covering it. But this is the end of the season for us at Pucknologists. And real quick, we'll do final thoughts. And I want to start, though, with just thanking Jerk and Rocket for, you know, coming along with me for all 26 episodes. Jerk wasn't here for all of them, but you know, but that's because
I wasn't here for all of them either.
Yeah, well, that's because he's a jerk. But but if you could begin your final thought, and I'll start with you, Jerk. Begin your final thought with who you think is in the final. Who beats who in the final?
I think the Stanley Cup final for the year 2017 is going to be the Battle of Philip Forsberg. It's going to be the Predators and the Capitals. And final thoughts. It's been great talking with you guys once a week on the show. Obviously, I missed some weeks, but we've covered this. I'm a jerk. But you know what? I'm happy to have had the opportunity to jump in with you guys. It's been a lot of fun. I think the Sharks are still in a good place. Whether Jumbo and Patty come back or whether they don't, I still think they're in a good spot. And I think these next couple years are going to be very crucial to the long-term future of the team. And you can follow me on Twitter at @hockey_jerk. Obviously, Pucknologists, we're taking our summer vacation. We're going to be going to the beach, doing a lot of swimming, and, you know, what else? Yeah, hiking, whatever you do in the summer. But you can also find me on TTG Reborn. We're doing a lot of Barracuda stuff and just general talking about the NHL. That's, you know, me, Ian, Zach, Kevin, and Joe. So that'll be fun. Hopefully tide us over until preseason. Back to you, AJ.
And I'm assuming you took Caps over the Preds?
I'll just leave that as a mystery. If you
No. Give me the pick.
You didn't ask for the pick. You just said who was going.
No. Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant who over who in the final.
Okay, fair. I'm going to say the Predators are going to beat the Capitals.
Nice. Alrighty. And, you know, and just to echo your statement there, you're right. I think the Sharks are in kind of a limbo right now. So, and I'm hoping it doesn't mirror Vancouver, because there are a lot of things that the Sharks have kind of mirrored Vancouver. So hopefully it's not how they've spiraled.
And for the final time this season, did somebody say Vancouver?
Hey, hockey jerk, here's your beer. Rocket, your final thoughts. Where the people can find you, but to start off with, who over who in the final?
Okay, it's going to be the... Oh, God, this is going to be a tough one. Sorry, I'm trying to figure out who I want to win out of this series, because I don't want either. Okay, oh, God.
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, this is a woman who brings a sign to games that says, I want you both to lose.
It's true. There's photographic proof of this. So I can't believe I'm saying this. I really am sorry I'm saying this. It's going to be the Ducks and the Penguins.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's how I feel. And the Ducks are going to win.
Here's your crap dinner. Would you like a side of crap as well?
I have a crap appetizer.
Oh, no, it's a crap a teaser.
A crap a teaser. Oh, yeah, I have a piece of crapple pie for dessert.
All right, your final thought and where they can find you.
Oh, yeah, so my final thoughts. Wow, 26 shows, 26 little episodes of awesomeness. I think I've only been around for maybe 24 or so. And it's been an incredible
24-ish.
Journey. Ish. It's been an incredible journey of laughter and growth and questions and just love. And it's been a really interesting journey being the fan of a 5'6 defenseman and his father. I've learned a lot about how having a tiny thing like the right attitude can alter your course drastically on how easy it is for you to find personal happiness on or off the ice. So to find this and other interesting facts, not facts, but just, you know, alternative facts and observations about life as it relates to ice hockey on and off the ice. You can check me out on Twitter, rbackhander76, doesn't matter. And I will be taking pictures on Instagram for Teal Town USA for a little bit longer. So keep looking at my photographic journey.
Hey now. And finally with me, as always, you can find me on the Twitter and the Insta, AJ_Strong. I also do contribute on occasion to Rocket's Insta when I can. Yeah. I don't have her photographic eye, but touche, what am I going to do? For me, and you, I know that Hockey Jerk seemed to have a little bit of a problem with Rocket's pick for the Stanley Cup. You know what, right now, I have it written down, the New York Rangers over the Anaheim Ducks in the Stanley Cup. So
how is that even gonna happen?
I'm just saying it would just be so, there's just something fitting about that to me. I don't know what it is, so that's what I'm going with. My final thoughts, like I said, you know, just thanks so much for listening to us over the 26 episodes and subscribing and checking us out on tealtownusa.com and, you know, checking out After Dark, TTG Reborn, just everything, reading everything, just being a part of the show. We appreciate it immensely. And again, to echo Jerk's statement, I think the Sharks are, they're at a crossroads right now. It's going to be a lot of fun to see how the next 3 years shake out, because they could do the quick rebuild, recover that salary from Marlow and Thornton, and who knows. Or they could just, you know, have an awful year, and we could be here in a year talking about the firings of Doug Wilson and Pete DeBoer. I mean, as you know, hey, anything can happen, right? So with that, again, thanks for tuning in. You'll hear us again sometime probably at the end of September or the beginning of October as the Pucknologist. So until then, thanks for tuning in. Again, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you use and follow us on Twitter at Pucknologists. And for the last time for the 16-17 season...